Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We are at the end of the first full week of January 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And, well, welcome. Welcome to Friday on the Front Porch. Here in about an hour or so, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and see what folks what's on folks' mind. That conversation is not at all driven by me. No. Oh, and me? Well, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, and you are the Horn Family Community Congregation. And this is a little broadcasting experiment unlike any other. If only we had the tinkling piano music that goes with CBS's promotion of the Masters Golf Tournament. A broadcast endeavor unlike any other. And maybe some azaleas in the background or something. But it is. This is unlike anything going on anywhere else. And you make it all happen. You. We, all together, this community, have for more than 10 years been perpetuating this conversation. And we do it $200 a day. That's a far cry from the millions and billions of dollars it takes to run for-profit media. But we managed somehow to get by. Now, we find ourselves this evening, might as well say it early and get it over with, we find ourselves this evening with a bit of a deficit. We've got $310. Thank you to our subscribers. We've got $310 to raise this evening, and that will enable the paying of some desperately needed to be paid bills that are in the offing and, you know, pretty pressing. So, yeah, what is that? 31 people at $10 a piece. Okay, that's about as much ciphering as I can do. I wish we had a challenge on the table, but we don't. We just need to get to $310 this evening. Of course, the PayPal interface is under the contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. You can forget about that part where they want you to write down what you do when you go to work every day at Mike Brady's architectural firm. Really, we don't want to know. And just get to the next screen. It's always about getting to the next screen. Texas T noting in the chat room, buffered to death here. Anybody else having buffering issues? Because I'm showing good, clean, nice sending. So we'll cross fingers. Now, it's Friday on the Front Porch, and we've spent an awful lot of time over the course of the past week on the numbnuts in Oregon, and there's a little bit more stuff to do, and there's gun stuff to do, and then there's this. Let's just, because it's fun, shall we? We haven't talked about Bro-Fro-Mix in a while. No, and that's really okay, because Bro-Fro-Mix, you know, Rick Man on Dog Santorum, is a giant steaming pile of not even dog excrement. Jackal excrement. That's Rick Santorum, and real dribbly at that. Yeah, sorry, I know it's dinner time, but I despise this attempt at a human being. And he's constantly searching for different ways to piss and moan and complain about marriage equality. And you may recall that in the 2012 race, he was making a beer is not water analogy. Just, you know, atne ute itbre, if you own a what I mean, may. Rick Fetus Fondler Santorum. But still, if you're in the for-profit radio business, you got to have content. It takes a lot. It takes a lot of dare I say it, skill to carry 3 hours of radio pretty much by yourself some nights, some days. And there aren't a lot of people who can do that. So when a guy like Simon Conway out in Iowegia gets a chance to have even a kiddie table candidate like Bro Fromix on his radio program, he jumps at the chance. Yes, he does. Because this is, you know, for a few months, every 4 years, people pretend that media in Iowa actually matter. And I'm not trying to take anything away from legitimate journalists in Iowa, not in the least. But like right-wing hate mongers, right-wing blatherskates, white-wing asshats, like the one who said that we should just enslave undocumented immigrants and let them go out and chop cotton or whatever. Chop corn. I mean, it's Iowa, right? Well, Simon Conway had Bro Fromix on his program. And, of course, the question turned, because it must, because you're talking with Rick Mann on Dog Santorum, to marriage equality, which Rick Mann on Dog Santorum really, really, really despises. I think there are probably some latency issues running around there, but we'll just have to wait until Rick Santorum gets caught snorting meth off of a gay hooker's butt to confirm that. But it'll happen. It'll eventually happen. And so this Simon Conway person, of whom I have never heard, began querying Bro Fromix about Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American. And, well, Rick Santorum did not disappoint. It's an early call for the hockey puck here on Friday on the front porch. And I do not issue those cavalierly, no.
Ted Cruz, a couple of days ago, came out and said, hey, don't split the conservative vote and let the moderate through the middle like we've done before.
Wait a minute. Is that a Sioux City accent? I'm sorry. I'm just asking.
You rightly point out you've been down this road before. Is he looking at some internal polling, do you think, that's have him a little bit worried, maybe?
Well, all I can say is that when you start using reasons other than I'm the best candidate to vote for me, then there might be some chinks in the armor. Uh-huh. And look, I'm very proud of the conservative record.
I wonder if the chinks are blah. Just asking.
Put together. There's no one that's fought more on moral and cultural issues. I'm not a libertarian. Now, there are people in this race that want the states to decide whether there should be same-sex marriage or polygamy or marijuana use. I don't believe that. I don't mm-hmm. believe that the states have the right to redefine something that is not capable of redefined. It's for me when you say the states have the right to define marriage, it's like saying, well, the states have the right to redefine the chemical equation for water. It can be H3O instead of H2O. Well, the states can't do that. Why? Because nature dictates what water is.
Okay.
Nature dictates what what marriage is, and the states don't have...
Mandrake, did you ever see a homosexual take a drink of water? It's not what they drink, is it? They drink Red Bull or Jägermeister shots or something, or mimosas. Right, Mandrake? Not water. Never water.
Have the right to violate what nature has dictated.
Well, you know.
that just charming, isn't it? But all that bit about changing marriage is like changing the equation for water. This man is I've got a pretty big vocabulary. And so sometimes when I want to describe somebody like Brofromix, Man on Dog Santorum, I search and I search and I search through all the various words I've learned in the course of years of being a practitioner of the art of word knowing, until I find just the right word, the very combination of phones and phonemes that speaks precisely to Rick Santorum.
You dick!
And there it is. Yes. So, to be clear, allowing people to have the full complement of rights available under the 14th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America is not, as he says, like saying the states have the right to redefine the chemical equation for water. Now, granted, at one point in time, I think the legislature of Alabama did try to redefine the value of pi to 3 because it was proving to be such a problem for so many white wingers down there. Yep, but still. No. No. In fact, Brofromix reminds me of a little rhyme we learned in high school chemistry eons ago when I was riding my stegosaur to 11th grade. You know, you could ride your stegosaur to 11th to school in 11th grade. You couldn't do that in 10th. You had to get into the upper echelon. And never mind. But I was immediately when I heard this clip earlier, I was immediately put in mind of something and it goes like this. Rick Santorum's dead and gone. He is with us no more. For what he thought was H2O was really H2SO4. Mm-hmm. Yep. That would be sulfuric acid. Nature dictates what water is. Nature dictates what marriage is. No, nature doesn't, dumbass. Have you ever actually been out in nature? No, I didn't think so. Is this what happens when you let morons watch Warner Brothers cartoons? I don't know. Because at one point in time, didn't the Tasmanian devil and the Tasmanian she-devil get married? Didn't Bugs Bunny officiate at the wedding? Because I'm pretty sure. Let's see. I even think... Yeah, I do. I remember the. Uh,
I remember the vows. Mm-hmm. I now pronounce you devil and devilish. I now pronounce you devil and devilish. Because, see, I hate to break it to Rick Santorum, but there aren't any nuptials in nature. Marriage is an entirely human construction. That's why we can break its bonds through the entirely human construction known as divorce. Mm-hmm. But don't try to tell that to Rick Santorum. And I guess I've been trying to do a better job of looking for the bright side of stories from the day. And if there's a bright side in this one, it is that no matter how long he screams that that allowing gay people to get married just 1 second. No matter how much he protests that allowing gay people to get married is somehow unnatural, it isn't. Because natural is, because this has nothing to do with the so-called laws of nature. The way the Higgs boson particle behaves is in no wise affected by a couple of women getting monogrammed bath towels. Mm-mm. No. But if there's a happy side to the story, it is that Brofromix Santorum is polling at numbers that are actually violative of nature, because they're negative numbers. They're unreal numbers. They're polar opposite concepts of numbers. Rick Santorum, when caucus day comes around, there's just not going to be a whole lot of people wandering around in their precincts going, "Oh, golly, I just got to vote for that. I got a caucus for that Rick Santorum." Mm-mm. No. No. Wow. Okay, a lot of confirmation coming in on buffering problems. I'm going to take a moment and try to sort these out. Ron in Canada telling me, you must have a larger audience than usual. The stream is being multiplexed such that I can only get the 16K feed. Oh, dear. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a minute. And I'll, shoot, hang on, let's find something here. No, that's not it. No, that's not it either. Here we go. Let me just bore you beyond comprehension with some classical music. And I'm going to see if I can sort some stuff out with Ben Burge. Hang on. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Sometimes the only way to find out if this thing is working is to try to make it work. And I'm presuming from some of what I saw in the chat room, many of whom have decided to now absent themselves. Oh, ye of little faith. Well, it looks like the classical music was getting through. And I appreciate everyone letting me know if they are or are not. But I'm going to assume that that Ben Burch has worked some level of his mighty magic to get things back to something approaching a semblance of broadcast normalcy. Okay, Sparky telling me in the chat room, working now, Bob. Thank you. Good, 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 good. So it's 28 minutes past the hour, and we will try to we'll try to get it going. Thomas telling me it's working now. You're on, says Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. And she just provided me an interesting little tidbit of news. You know, whenever somebody decides to protect freedom, and in the space it takes for the trigger to release the firing pin into the you know how it works, and suddenly goes from lawful gun owner to awful gun owner. Well, you know, no matter, and even it, whether it's one or two or 14 or 34 or however many people the lawful gun owner manages to kill, the only thing that we're allowed to say here in Merca is that it's not the gun's fault. We have mental health issues in this country. Right? Yeah. Ah, thank you very kindly. Dan telling me loud and clear on TuneIn. And no, dear Jude, you are not the only one losing the horn, the horn audio. Let me suggest... sometimes you have to do a reload of the player. But anyway, so that's what we're allowed to say, that we have mental health issues in Merca. Oh, great. Thomas has just lost you again. Some bitch. Well, anyway, that's what I apologize. Okay, in a fully funded, fully functional, fully staffed broadcast sort of situation, there are people who work in the background to resolve these issues. Here it's me and it's Ben. As Gerald just noted, I rebooted everything. The stream seems to be okay for right now. And then the next message, well, fuck, gone again. And now I'm back, says Carol. I lost you too, but you're back, and you're gone again, and you're back. Randy and PA telling me, I heard you say that Ben Burch had worked his magic, and then the stream stopped playing. It's going to be a frustrating evening. Thank you. Sparky says you're golden, Bob. Please let me know when I start to tarnish, would you? Anyway, there in Texas, because we have mental health problems are always the cause of all of our gun-related firearms-based violence. Well, a decision has been reached in that state. And unless I've got this completely bass-ackwards, firearms are now going to be allowed in the state psychiatric hospitals of Texas. I know. Let's see. With the passage of Texas's new open carry law that went into effect January 1, licensed gun owners can now bring their firearms into all 10 of the state's psychiatric hospitals. That via the Austin American Statesman. The Austin State Hospital took down signs on their property that banned guns, meaning visitors can now bring their guns into the buildings where patients live. The old signs have been replaced with new ones that ask people to leave their guns in their vehicles or to conceal them at the Guadalupe Street Hospital, according to the Austin American Statesman. But mind you, employees still can't bring guns on campus, which means freedom is still compromised in the state of Texas, because until the great big paranoid, overwrought, overprivileged, pasty-faced, doughy babies of the firearms movement, until every last one can take a firearm every last place that he wants to go, well, then freedom is being trampled. The KVU East ABC story says, while some lawmakers have said they see no problem with legally obtained and licensed guns in the hospitals, others fear it will put patients in danger. They fear it. They're not sure. They're just concerned that it might. Possibly. Maybe. Sorta. Or as I like to say, hey, guns in mental hospitals? What could possibly go wrong? Here's another story. This one coming from the Dallas Morning News. The reporter in this case being Tom Benning. Texas's 10 state psychiatric hospitals, including a 288-bed facility in Terrell, are coming into compliance with state law by now allowing Texans with handgun licenses to carry into their buildings. Kerry Williams, spokesman for the Department of State Health Services, on Friday confirmed that decision, first reported by the Austin American Statesman. The paper noted that the Austin State Hospital this week pulled down its longstanding no gun signs. Though Williams said they were previously able to post such signs disallowing guns on campus, it doesn't appear the law has provided or does provide that discretion to state psychiatric hospitals. That goes for concealed carry and now the new open carry law. Those hospitals in Austin and elsewhere will now post signage that requests visitors to voluntarily eschew firearms. While licensed holders are legally permitted to carry, we're asking them to conceal them or put them safely in their car when visiting our state hospitals, Kerry Williams said. So it seems likely, Tom Benning reports, that the change is instead being driven by another new state law that allows governmental entities to be penalized for improperly posting no guns signs. Williams confirmed that the state psychiatric hospitals are not licensed under a particular code portion of the Texas state code. That would indicate that even before open carry, those facilities couldn't bar gun license holders from carrying there. Beth Mitchell with Advocacy, Inc., a mental health advocacy group, said allowing people to bring guns to the state psychiatric hospitals makes no sense. I don't know who concocted this idea, who thought this would be a rational policy for the state of Texas. It's only going to create fear among the patients themselves. Well, they got nothing to be afraid of. Golly Moses, Beth Mitchell. Well, you're the one sowing the fear. Bunch of law-abiding, lawful gun owners who could at any moment turn out to be an awful gun owner. Well, there's nothing for those poor people to fear. No. No. What could they possibly be afraid of? And ancillary to that, who cares? Right? I mean, they're just mental health patients in mental health facilities run by the state. 10 of them. And since when are they to, should they be accorded any degree of civility or concern, even though they are among the most fragile citizens? Of the entire state. Coal smoke. Yummy. Anybody with half a brain knows that the most important people in Texas are the paranoid, pasty-faced, doughy, white people who can't quite muster up enough courage to go down to the Rippy Mart for a Slurpee without strapping on a 19-round Glock 9mm semi-automatic pistol. That's whose opinion matters in Texas. That's whose opinion matters all across Merca. Meanwhile, interesting. It's interesting that that story is breaking, or has broken as it did, in the wake of President Obama's CNN town hall yesterday evening. Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper, member of the 1%, moderating, who I guess was trying to earn some street cred with the White Wing by telling the President of the United States that people just don't trust that he doesn't want to come get their guns. And sometimes there are moments there, and I know, as good left-wing progressives, we're supposed to just hate Barack Obama almost as much as hating Hillary. But I can't do that. I am a good progressive, and I'm past progressive. I'm a lot further left past that than, no. But in this particular clip, his ire is on display. As he responds to a question about from Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper, multimillionaire, multi-generational scion of vast wealth in this country. We'll take the whole thing. It's only a couple of minutes long. But it's worth listening to. It's worth listening for the credence that and credibility that Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper gives to the white wing in this country, and the response of Barack Obama to that. I suspect that there was some core portion of Barack Obama that wanted to reach across and just slap the spit right out of Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper.
Is it fair to call it a conspiracy? I mean, well, yeah. There's a lot of people really believe this deeply, that they just don't.
No, they just don't
trust you.
I'm sorry, Cooper. Yes, it is fair to call it a conspiracy. What are you saying?
And by the way, the premise of the question is one great big wagon load of horseshit. Did you notice that? Did you notice that Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper, member of the 1%, did you notice that he uses the most dangerous word in the English language in that setup?
Is it fair to call it a conspiracy? I mean, well, yeah. There's a lot of people really believe this deeply.
What do they believe? That he's a Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, who learned how to hate Merca in the madrasas that he went to, and he ain't got no long-form birth certificate because he ain't really who he says he is, and he weren't born in Merca, and even if he was, his daddy was an agitating Negro activist organizer, and not that feller from Kenya, except for the fact that he's going to always be Kenyan, no matter who his daddy was. This is what people believe. And so you've got a major news operation, allegedly, CNN, Chicken Noodle News. You've got them actually out there pandering to what people believe. Some people believe that his name is really Barry Sotoro. Some people believe that Oily Taint, that goofy woman, that she's got it all just nailed right down. Some people believe what they read over at Wingnut Daily. Believe, 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 believe. And there's a millionaire carrying their water for him. Charming, Anderson. Just charming. Can you still hear the calliopes, Anderson?
Is it fair to call it a conspiracy? I mean, well, there's a lot of people really believe this deeply, that they just don't trust you.
I'm sorry, Cooper. Yes, it is fair to call it a conspiracy. What are you saying? Are you suggesting that the notion that we are creating a plot to take everybody's guns away so that we can impose martial law
is a conspiracy?
Yes, that is a conspiracy. I would hope that you would agree with that. Is that controversial? Except on some websites around the country?
There are certainly a lot of people who just have a fundamental distrust that you do not want to go further and further and further down this road.
Look,
Jesus, I mean, I usually don't engage in a whole lot of self-promotion. My 8-year-old granddaughter could have conducted a better interview than Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper. This is just pathetic. And meanwhile, yes, Chris Kyle, the American sniper, who took a mentally ill man to the gun range to help him work out his frustrations, at which point the mentally ill man blew Chris Kyle away. Wile E. Coyote, super genius. She was there in attendance, and she just doesn't understand why the president doesn't celebrate the 99.9% of the good gun owners. Funny. I find it difficult to figure out how to celebrate 33,000 gun deaths a year in this country. I mean, cakes, fireworks, what? Tell me, Mrs. American Sniper, Mrs. Shooting Thugs from the Roof of the Superdome, please tell. Jesus.
I'm only going to be here for another year. I don't know. When would I have started on this enterprise, right? I come from the state of Illinois, which we've been talking about Chicago, but downstate Illinois is closer to Kentucky.
Pure redneck. That's what he's trying to say when he says closer to Kentucky. Yeah. Pure redneck. Well, no, that's unfair, too. But no, southern Illinois is very rural. Let's put it that way, shall we? Very white and very rural.
Than it is to Chicago. And everybody hunts down there. And a lot of folks own guns. And so this is not like alien territory to me. Yes, it is a false notion that I believe is circulated for either political reasons or commercial reasons.
Or both. I like that. Political reasons or commercial reasons. Don't think for a minute that the President of the United States doesn't know that he has been the best thing that has ever happened to the firearms and ammunition industry in this country. Don't think that he doesn't know that on the day he announced his executive actions that the Sturm Ruger and Smith & Wesson stocks both jumped dramatically in their listings on Wall Street. No. Because they did, and he knows.
In order to prevent a coming together among people of goodwill to develop common sense rules that will make us safer while preserving the Second Amendment. And the notion that we can't agree on some things while not agreeing on others, and the reason for that is because, well, the president secretly wants to do X, would mean that we'd be paralyzed about doing everything. I mean, maybe when I propose to make sure that, you know, unsafe drugs are taken off the market, that secretly I'm trying to control the entire drug industry or take people's drugs away. But probably not. What's more likely is I just want to make sure that people are not dying by taking bad drugs.
That makes a ton of sense, which means it will be absolutely intolerable to Emery and Marveline there in the matching Barca loungers watching Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Yeah, and in point of fact, in answer to your question, Gerald, yes, Chicken Noodle News has gone over to the Some People Say Bullshit to spin their stories. That's that Anderson Cooper's question was straight out of the Fox News style book. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Look, there seems to be a consistent, and this is really tough. I didn't plan to take the night off. I didn't want to take the night off. But there's really not a lot of sense in making everybody who wants to listen to this program constantly reload their player in hopes that they will get a stream that doesn't just buffer all to hell. This is monumentally frustrating. So I don't really. Carol tells me he can't get you for more than 15 to 20 seconds at a time before the stream drops. Little Gray in the chat room saying it's pretty bad currently. Sparky says it's working at the moment, Bob. Yeah, for how long? Note coming in from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, and marvelous coherence is something in which I am badly in need at the moment. Diane says, I recently got a message from Kansas State University to schedule my training for what to do when there is a shooting on campus. And just reading that sentence makes me feel like it's like, you know, when you start dropping on a roller coaster, you just feel like your guts are coming up into your throat. I recently got a message from Kansas State University to schedule my training for what to do when there is a shooting on campus. This is compliments of a new Kansas law that, by the way, does not require any training for purchasing and using a gun. Diane says, I started swearing like a sailor. It's a double whammy because besides being concerned for my safety, I will now need to be concerned for that of my students. It sucks. It is not what I signed up for. And I dare say it's not what the vast majority of academicians signed up for. I have a very, very dear friend of long standing who is a PhD professor of English and literature, and she's brilliant. And she teaches in one of the Stan states. And I need to ask her how they cope. But honestly, Diane, I don't know how you cope. Because I do. I pay attention to language, and it's not training for what to do if there's a shooting on campus. It's training for what to do when there's a shooting on campus, because there will be. And so, Diane, marvelously coherent that she is, has my full and complete sympathy, and I'm sure the full and complete sympathy of the whole Horn Family Community Congregation in this regard. How do you plan for, among other things, a PTSD aftermath that was no fault of your own? How do you plan for students on edge? How is anyone supposed to learn if everybody's waiting for somebody else to yell incoming? Or gun, gun, gun. You know, way, way, way back in the dim mists of time, when I was a very, very bad high school football player, you know, the first thing you were taught, if there was a fumble, everybody was supposed to yell ball, 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 so that people would know that the pigskin was loose on the ground and available for the taking. How in God's name, especially, and factor into this the monumental amount of money that one has to pay, how in God's name are you supposed to learn anything, you little freshman, you? I mean, you're sitting there in biology 101, the frog is pinned to the wax in the pan. You've got your little disposable scalpel out, and you, gun, gun, gun. What do you do then? Because there's a certain kinship between what you do with an open shooter situation and the civil defense preparedness drills that we did in this country a generation or two ago. Some of you of a certain age will remember those. How you were supposed to get under your desk, or maybe you went out in the hall and hunkered down by a brick wall, hoping that maybe it would stop some of the radiation penetrating if you weren't at ground zero of the blast itself and just got vaporized in an instant. It was an exercise in futility that was meant to people obtain a false sense of security. And so, too, is all this gun preparedness business. If you're where it's happening, it's going to happen. If you're where it's not happening, then you're just going to sit there and be traumatized. And thanks to the legislature of the state of Kansas and the state of Texas and other similar states, you're paying for the privilege of being traumatized. And not just a little bit. You're paying great big horse-gagging loads of money to be subjected to something that may well wind up with you being, to a certain extent, affected for the rest of your life, afflicted for the rest of your life with post-traumatic stress disorder. So you have my deepest sympathy, Diane, and as I said, that of the entire Horn Family Community Congregation. It isn't what you signed up for. And I know how much you love what you do, where you do. And I'm sure there are other places that would be absolutely tickled pink to have you on their faculty, but that's not what you signed up for either. It wasn't a dice roll that took you to K-State. It was a desire. You know, I think about the children in Burns, in Harney County, Oregon, in Burns, who have not been able to go to school all week long because of a bunch of idiots who've occupied a bird sanctuary. And it seems so absolutely unfair, unjust. Wrong. Yeah, let me take a moment here. And while what happened in on the campus of George Mason University last night with the president's town hall was an attempt by him to use the power of his bully pulpit, well, thanks, but here's a pretty good here's a pretty good example of. The follow-up. Over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, which is the broadcast arm of the National Republican Rifle Association, Megyn Kelly, alleged journalist, had Chris Cox on from the National Republican Rifle Association. Just a second. Sorry, I'm communicating with Ben Birch, too. he has completely restarted the server, and maybe it'll make a difference. I hope it does. But anyway, recall, please, that with this town hall, that the NRA was most cordially and politely invited to attend by the President of the United States of America. But this white supremacist organization felt itself above that invitation. Now, this isn't a military dictatorship. It's not a fascist autocracy or anything like that. And so, no, they didn't have to show up because the president invited them. It's something that you do as a matter of respect. But the National Republican Rifle Association couldn't even muster up that degree of decorum or regard. Remember back when we were sick and tired of George W. Bush and the Republicans constantly told us, well, you don't have to respect him, but you got to respect the office. Well, not so much if you're the National Republican Rifle Association. And understand, they will pay no price for having declined a personal invitation from the President of the United States to participate in a discussion about one of the most pressing issues that faces our country. So let's go to the audio. I'm not so much, I think you take the hockey puck out for this one and just have a bucket handy in case the urge to vomit it overcomes you.
Chris Cox with his organization's first response to President Obama. Chris, thank you so much for being here. So let's start with the notion that he wants to meet with you. He went on to say, if only you'll put aside your rhetoric and what he seemed to be describing as straw men when it comes to gun issues. Are you prepared to meet with him?
Well, Megan, let's be clear what this is really about. This president's trying to create an illusion that he's doing...
Answer the question, you shit weasel. No, you're not.
Something to keep people safe. He needs to do that because the truth is his policies have failed miserably. We saw that materialize itself in San Bernardino when we had a terrorist attack. This president didn't use it as an opportunity to unite this country. He didn't use it as an opportunity to lay out a plan to defeat terrorism. He used it as an opportunity to impose more gun control on law-abiding Americans.
He's
so let's
treating
be clear.
That as a case of gun violence as well.
Exactly. This is an attempt to distract the American people away from his failed policies. So did we participate in CNN's event tonight? No, we didn't. We were offered one pre-screened question. Megan, I know that you don't send your questions over to the White House, so I'd rather have a conversation with you that's intellectually honest than sit through a
intellectually honest and Megyn Kelly in the same sentence. Sure. You betcha. One pre-screened question. Well, that's only because they wanted to make sure that you didn't refer to him as President Blackenstein, okay, Chris Cox? Because we know that all the way up to the corner top floor office of Wayne LaPierre, we know what words the NRA uses to describe the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. We know real well.
Sure, and get one opportunity to ask a pre-screened question.
Does it make sense to meet with him?
Well, and talk about what, Megan? This president can talk about background checks all day long, but that's nothing more than a distraction away from the fact that he can't keep us safe, and he supported every gun control proposal that's ever been made.
So background checks are a distraction. You think they might distract somebody who can't pass a background check? That might be a good distraction. This is Chris Cox. You might remember him from, the Whitewater hearings? This guy is the filthiest sort of partisan. So what does, does that even qualify as reasoning? I'm going to go back a little bit.
Screen question.
Does it make sense to meet with him?
Well, and talk about what, Megan? This president can talk about background checks all day long, but that's nothing more than a distraction away from the fact that he can't keep us safe, and he supported every gun control proposal that's ever been made. He doesn't support the individual right to own a firearm.
He can't, but the thing is, Chris Cox, he can't keep people safe from your members. Your lawful gun owners who in a trice become awful gun owners.
And what was safe, and he supported every gun control proposal that's ever been made. He doesn't support the individual right to own a firearm. That's been the position of his Supreme Court nominees. That's been the position of his administration. So what are we going to talk about, basketball? I'm not really interested in going over and talking to the president who doesn't
Oh, no, he didn't. But yes, he did. What are we going to talk about? Basketball? I wonder what word would have replaced basketball had the president been of the appropriate skin tone. Now, take your victories where you can find them. At least Chris Cox didn't say watermelon.
Basic level of respect or understanding of the Second Amendment and law-abiding gun owners in this country.
But see, you know who doesn't have a respect or an understanding of the basic meaning of the Second Amendment in this country? Chris Cox and every member of the National Republican Rifle Association and Wayne LaPierre and Ted Nugent. Because as Dr. Bill in his analysis of an article from The Atlantic back on Wednesday clearly laid out, the Second Amendment doesn't mean what the NRA keeps trying to gun-fondle it into meaning. It was absolutely fascinating when I heard Dr. Bill say, had the theory put into place by the court in Heller been in place in 1776, the United States would likely, the young breakaway colonies, would likely have lost the Revolution. I'm not going to go back into all of it. I encourage you to go back and check out that file, the archive of Dr. Bill for this past Wednesday. You'll be glad you did. But let's let Chris Cox finish.
I'm interested in going over and talking to the president, who doesn't have a basic level of respect or understanding of the Second Amendment and law-abiding gun owners in this country.
Here's what he said. Tonight he tried to say this, that there's not an area of our lives that we don't make a little safer. He talked about little toys for children that they could choke on. He talked about cars and seatbelt laws. And he said to not apply that same principle to guns would be inconsistent.
Megan, this president would have the American people believe that in order to love your children, you have to hate your firearms. That's not only offensive, it's disgusting.
No, you know what's disgusting is that you love your firearms more than you love America's children. That's disgusting. And of course, it's worth mentioning that this creep has to go on Fox in order to spew this filth. The fact of the matter is, by refusing any sort of an attempt to make this country, which is awash in blood and guns, even an iota safer. In order to make this country safer for little two-year-olds so they won't be shot by their five-year-old big bubbies. Well, that's obnoxious. That's intolerable to the National Rifle Association. So it does follow that the National Rifle Association prefers little dead two-year-olds shot dead by their five-year-old big bubbies to doing anything at all to prevent that from happening. See, this is one of the problems we have in America today. We've been convinced by horror movies and thrillers and whatnot to think that monsters wear hockey masks or have razor sharp claws at the ends of their hands, when in point of fact they wear $1,200 suits, blue dress shirts, and mauve-ish pale pink neckties, and have short haircuts, and show up on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda declaring that the only thing they could talk about with the President of the United States, a man of color, is basketball. Gerald heard that line and screamed a little bit, maybe threw up a little bit. Keep us safe. He can't keep us safe. And Gerald said, you mean like G.W. Bush did? Remember a certain day in September 2001? Yeah. He kept us safe. I mean, after you weren't dead in 9/11, didn't you feel like George W. Bush had kept you safe? And of course, that whole keep us safe trope entered the national consciousness with September 11th, 2001. I'm the decider. It's my job to keep America safe. No, it isn't. Go and read the Constitution. Read the delineated duties of the President of the United States. If you find keep us safe in there anywhere, you did it by putting lemon juice on the document and finding some hidden ink or a secret message, or maybe you used the decoder ring that you got in your box of NRA-sanctioned Freedom Krispies in the cereal aisle. Disgusting. Just disgusting. Well, wrap it up, Chris Cox.
Believe that in order to love your children, you have to hate your firearms. That's not only offensive, it's disgusting. This president would have you believe that somehow we don't care about keeping our kids safe. Gun owners in this country do more, and the National Rifle Association does more to teach safe and responsible gun ownership than this president ever has or ever will.
He talks about the...
Thanks to Media Matters for the clip. I wonder how they do it. Sit there and listen to this swill day in and day out. Well, look, I'm not going to give up on the evening's attempt at broadcasting. I don't know how many people already have given up, but I'm not giving up yet. Apparently something remains amiss. Damn. Well, Okay. I'm going to play a little more music and see if I can get a couple of answers, and we'll either go forward or not. Okay. Sparky says, good here, Bob. Well, I'll try to sort it out. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We seem to be on about a 70-30 doesn't streak tonight. And it's, you know, it's rough because we were we needed to raise about $310 this evening. And, you know, we don't need to go into Moran Monday at $510. So, if you're still listening, all help is good help. Plain and simple. Steve in New York notes, I'm all for, regarding Chris Cox, et cetera, I'm all for listening and consensus. However, when you already know someone has nothing to say, why would you even invite them to the conversation? You knew, Bob, as well as I did, what this guy was going to say. Well, sure. But there are formalities. I mean, if you go to a White House state dinner, you don't eat with your elbows, or slurp soup directly from the bowl with your face in it. And generally speaking, if you receive an invitation from the President of the United States, you have the common dignity to show up. Because in most cases, if you're not the National Republican Rifle Association, there is a horrible, horrible price to pay. Because people then understand you generally to be a pig. Maybe we already understand the NRA are pigs. And as Steve suggests, knowing they were pigs, why wouldn't we expect them to behave in a porcine fashion? All right. Let's take a break. See if we can sort any of this out. And I don't know. Do we have the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable fired up? We'll have a go at it then. Oh, by the way, a note from Tim from L.A. for Diane in Kansas, Stan, if you can still hear us, Diane. Tim says there are hundreds of street gangs in Los Angeles, and there are also tag bangers too, taggers who are gang members. But at my former community college, East Los Angeles College, every gang member knows that ELAC is a neutral zone, and no one really worries about an active shooter on campus. It's amazing to hear the demise that you, Diane, are facing, and they call my hood dangerous. Well, that's pretty profound. Thank you, Tim. Break time. This is the horn.
I'm
Adam and the Ants from back in the early 80s. Killer in the Home. And just seems terribly, terribly appropriate. All right, let's see if we can make the magic work. 24 minutes past the hour, and let's go over to Sparky and see if the Horn Malloy Skype chat group works. Are you there, Sparky?
Yes, I am, Bob. Loud and clear.
Hot diggity. Well, thank heaven for some. I'm pretty well sure that this is stuff on the server end. So I got nothing.
Well, it seems to be. I got my radio on real low, and I get a little buffering noise window on there when it starts it. But it's so far so good.
Well, we'll cross our fingers then.
It's been bouncing in and out.
And the thing is, there's really no way to know when it's going to do it or when it ain't. It's just really frustrating when it doesn't, when the magic doesn't work.
Well, maybe more people will come in here tonight. Jack, just get me.
Yeah, Jack's. Well, we got a good group. Billable Rick is with us. Roger in Minnesota is with us. Tim from L.A. is with us. And, Jack in Shreveport just joined in.
Hello.
Rick,
I didn't know
Rick stepped away for some tea.
Well, everything seems to be working so far. Here.
It will on Skype.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, the thing is, through all of this, and this is what makes it so bizarre, and you'd have to... All I can tell you is when I've got buffering problems, I see them. Okay? I see them in real time. I see them as they happen. I haven't seen... The only time I saw buffering was when Ben Birch shut down and restarted the streaming server a half an hour ago. Then I saw it, because it just went... And it was down, and it quit sending. I hit send and everything, but I haven't seen the first little blip of buffering all night long, which generally means that there's some sort of creepiness going on with the server.
Yeah, either the server or one of the tubes in the internet may be down, you know, some node somewhere.
Or it's Agent Fred.
Yeah.
I hope it's not Agent Fred. I mean, maybe it's some evil cabal run by the NRA.
Yeah.
It could be.
I was saying that the gun nuts are giving us all hydrocephalus and messing with the white rose stream.
That's as good an explanation as any, Roger.
Are we that powerful?
No, we are that intolerable. See, that's that, and in a way, I joke saying that I don't know if I'm joking or not, but with regard to the gun argument in this country, any dissent from the orthodox dogma of the NRA is intolerable. That's the nature of an orthodoxy. I remember a few years ago as an analogy, there was a little girl in New Jersey, and she was deadly allergic to wheat gluten. And she'd been confirmed into the Roman Catholic Church, but she couldn't take the host if she wanted to keep living. You know, she couldn't take communion. And so the parents asked very nicely, could we get some magic crackers in that weren't made of wheat? And the archbishop or the cardinal or the bluebird or whatever, the exalted 32nd degree noble Turk, whatever he was, said, well, no, God wants wheat, and that's what we're going to use. And, you know, your little 7-year-old's just going to have to learn to burn in hell. That's orthodoxy. You don't change anything for anybody. And one of the greatest successes of the National Republican Rifle Association has been that it has managed to transform the firearm, any firearms discussion into this in this country, into an orthodoxy in which whatever the NRA pronounces is the orthodoxy, and everything else is a heresy.
A crusade, huh?
They engage in a metaphorical political execution of any politician, or they try to, of any politician who does not toe their line. The only politicians who are safe from them are politicians who represent districts that are not majority owned and controlled by the NRA.
California seems to do pretty well, though.
Well, yeah, that's because you've got enough of a populational majority to make it possible for the people who want sensible gun regulations to overcome the right wing booger eating loudmouths.
I have a question about though. I'm trying to read as much as I can. Did you read the law by any chance, Bob?
I read some of it, and there we go. Okay, I just told you I'd see it when it buffered. There it went. Just completely crashed.
When I said good.
Yeah. Can't even get it to...
Spouse would have said, my husband or wife is kind of mentally disturbed, so they could call the police department. They can take away their firearms at 21 days, I guess, challenge it or whatever. Thing is, can't they? I wonder if they could go out then and buy another gun. Just because, you know, they're in fear for their life, quote unquote, because of mental issues, quote, whatever. The deeming of the threat or whatever wasn't. Again, deemed by a judge who said, "Oh, this person can't have a firearm because they're not mentally capable." So, I wonder if they could still buy another, like a rifle.
I would think they'd be prohibited from that, but I don't know if they could actually enforce it.
Well, enforcement is a problem, and the other problem is the data and reporting on the front end.
Yeah,
I mean, for instance, with Barack Obama's new executive actions, President Obama's there's modifications to HIPAA so that it becomes possible for people who ought not have firearms by virtue of certain diagnoses and proceedings to not be allowed to buy them. You know, for instance. The guy in, you know, not too awfully far from you, Sparky, in Reading, who went sideways a few days ago and just started spraying bullets at people.
Oh, yeah.
And wound up committing suicide by cop. I'm not going to say that there is no mental illness component to our firearms problem in the United States. The thing is, though, it should be a relatively simple process to keep mentally ill people from getting access to firearms. And even that argument is problematic because in general terms, people with mental illness are no more likely to commit gun violence, I think, statistically, than your average NRA member.
Well, I think you have to get adjudicated, you know, to, you know, you get a judge to declare you can't have any guns anymore. A doctor can't just, you know, call in, hey, this guy.
Right. The fact that somebody prescribed you Paxil once is not enough to prevent you from being able to purchase and keep and bear arms.
Right.
You have to be ordered by a judge in order.
Yeah.
So to a certain extent, the mental health argument is so much crap. And frankly, it's a knotty, knotty issue because you don't want to discourage people who need mental health treatment and mental health medical access. You don't want to discourage them from getting it because they sit there, because they'll sit there. Well, but if I go to the doctor, they won't let me have a gun no more. Because people are that connected, they are that viscerally attached to their firearms in this country.
Yeah, but wouldn't Roe versus Wade protect them from prying eyes of the government?
No.
I mean, under HIPAA laws? Because unless you're ordered by a judge, I mean, and say that you voluntarily go to a hospital, not by order of a judge, you can still buy a firearm. And a business can't just, well, the government can't say, well, you can't do that because he or she is taking, you know, antidepressants.
Right. So we see just in this brief little conversation we've had here, we see that the whole mental health argument that's promulgated by the NRA is just a straw man. It's tissue. It's not even straw. It's rice paper, Tim.
Yeah, okay. But isn't this more of the reason why the NRA should support Roe versus Wade?
Don't even try that. No. Don't even go there. That's just silly.
Well, actually, I put a comment like that in on Facebook with the NRA. No comments yet.
And you know, don't be surprised.
I want to see what kind of reaction I would get.
Oh, see, anytime you post something like that, with that intent, you know you're just trolling.
I know.
Oh, okay. Well, as long as you know, then.
I want to see how they would react.
And I had a call from Tracy earlier when we were having, and I thought she was going to join in on Friday on the front porch. I don't know. She may yet. Not sure.
I'll see if she's on.
Well, she called in on the she called in on the stress line.
Oh, okay.
I love trolling Republicans.
Well, you know, no one trolls white wingers better than Carol Baker does. I mean, my God,
Italian, she's the expert.
Oh, and that latest iteration of the Gadsden flag, you know, just that big urine-colored field with the snake kind of squished on it underneath a tire tread, and it just says, God damn it! Hmm. You know, for all the stupidity that the Oregon business has, and you know, you can't even call it a standoff, because one side has to be participating for it to be a standoff. But it has generated some genuine humor. I had an email at the beginning of the program, or before the beginning of the program, from let me see here. Oh, from GK in Minnesota. Next time you speak with Carol Baker, tell her thanks for me. I fucking got such a kick out of her latest treasure find about those jihadis over to the bird sanctuary. Where does she find those nuggets of pure, solid gold? Yeah. We lost two men today, one to a flare-up of gout and another to a peanut allergy.
Well, they got reinforcements this afternoon, Bob.
It's what I heard. What do you know, Sparky?
The Idaho militia is there to protect the perimeter.
Secure
a perimeter around the compound and prevent a Waco style situation.
So they've got tanks, do they? And aircraft?
Nope.
And a carrier?
Okay, then. So
there's videos in that link I posted too. There were one video with Ammon Bundy comments on arrival of an Idaho group.
Did they come in with their bugles blaring and on horses or? No, probably not. They probably came in a rusted out, busted down 84 Caprice.
I don't know. Some of these guys seem to have real nice pick-em-up trucks.
Well, that's funny. You should mention that because it turns out there's been a little bit of journalism done. These guys are many of these guys are a bunch of no good layabout welfare sucks. I mean, I love this photograph over at Raw Story, T-Bog, his column. It starts out with a picture of John Ritzheimer earnestly sucking from a Capri Sun juice baggie. And if you, as soon as you can, my darling, send some of those combos, the pretzel kind with the pizza flavor, not the crackery ones that look like dog treats.
You know, these people are obviously overgrown children with delusions of self-importance. They've watched too many documentaries on the Civil War where John Boy writes home to plantation or what have you in dramatic style, and have somehow taken it upon themselves that they're embarking in such a storied effort. It's childish and it's just delusionary.
Well, here's a lovely little example. The woman who has appointed herself or been appointed the official spokesperson for the Hee Haw Caliphate. Her name is Maureen Peltier, and at present she is a member of the Washington National Guard. Now, I would suggest that by associating herself with this bunch, she has broken her oath with regard to the Washington National Guard, wouldn't you? But here in a little bit, she's going to retire from the Washington National Guard, not because of length of service, but because she is disabled. Okay, and I don't want anyone to take anything that I'm saying as being a criticism of people with disabilities. They're very real. I live in West Virginia. I know this. But she's going to retire on disability from the Washington National Guard, which means that she is going to get one of those early Kyler Squidbillies government money checks. Okay? Which will then, as T-Bog says at Raw Story, give her more time to join protests against the government who is paying her a disability check. Now, see, you and I recognize the inherent intellectual flaw in a statement like that. The cognitive dissonance that one must be able to engage in order to do that. These people are cognitively shortchanged. John Ritzheimer, okay? John Ritzheimer, he of the tattoos and the weepy audio that I played the other night about how, I'm sorry Daddy couldn't be with you Christmas and New Year's, but I had to stroke my ego. He gets a government money check.
For what?
Some kind of disability.
Veterans disability?
Yeah.
With driving all those trucks made his ass wear out.
In the past, Ritzheimer said he gets by on his veterans disability pay, and he's, quote, lucky to have a wife who works.
Because I read during Spartan, in the Marine Corps, he was a truck driver.
Spartan, he didn't wear out his ass because he's still talking through it.
Ooh! Ouch. I can smell the smoke of that burn from here, Roger. But a lot of these people are military disability welfare babies.
We can't end their checks?
Well, I mean, you know, if you engage in sedition against the federal government, I should think you probably would welcome having your check cut.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how can you have any self-respect?
You're taking money from the enemy.
Now, the Oregonian newspaper interviewed Mark Pitkavage, and he's a 22-year expert on right-wing movements. And he said right-wing extremists, generally speaking, have very little money. See, I don't know how much I'm willing to believe of that. I think there's some serious right-wing money, white-wing money behind all of this.
I think the Koch brothers are promoting it.
It would not shock me a nickel's worth, Rick. I'm glad to see you got your audio issue solved.
Oh my God, I'm amazed. I thought I was like the invisible man here. Well, that's good. I mean, it's sort of like these people are saying, like, you know, big government, keep your hands off my disability check. I mean, you know, they're such idiots. You know, sort of like the debate during the health care, the Obamacare bill. You know, exactly.
I mean, one wonders if John Ritzheimer got his disability check before or after the Kenyan Muslim usurper took office.
I bet you it was after.
Hey, well, I kind of do, too.
Because I think he was still in the Marine Corps then.
So I'm going to put out a general inquiry. Has audio improved?
Bob, I'm monitoring both streams, the low and high quality from White Rose, and they're both dropping simultaneously for equal lengths of time. And it's as bad as it has been all evening.
Okay, well, I need to report that to Ben.
Sounds like a good night to listen to the podcast for those who aren't on Skype.
It's working on my radio, Bob.
Come to Skype. Look for Sparky Dunk.
Yeah, I just turned my radio up. It's working again.
Bizarre.
I think this is a thorn in the side Friday, Bob.
And it's going all the way through. It's going all the way through to my, my spleen.
Can you see that picture of the people up there in Oregon and the Skype chat with the kids?
How far up is it?
It's in the Skype chat.
Oh, I see.
Chat.
Okay. Yeah. I see it there.
That's the first thing I've seen of them. Is that Oregon? I've been monitoring OregonLive.com. They seem to have somebody there all the time.
1 minute and 37 seconds of continuous sending on White Rose.
Yeah, I'll be damned.
They all white, eh? Or pink.
I'll let you know when it drops again.
What kind of miserable, soulless chicken shits use their children as human shields?
Saddam Hussein.
Okay, yeah, Saddam Hussein and these patriots.
Yeah. Or Al-Qaeda as well. You know? And ISIS. These guys are like cut from the same cloth. They just don't realize it, you know?
Yeah, the TARP guy there, he's got that kid around his neck. So he doesn't get his head shot.
I mean, just leave the kids out of it. You know, they should be in school. Of course, the schools are closed because of the, you know, disruption that these
No, their kids are from another state.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah.
We're committing a federal
crime. Well, hell, they're probably homeschooled for that matter.
Kids out of it. You know, they should be in school. Of course, the schools are closed because of the, you know, disruption that these
No, their kids are from another state. Oh, turn down your radio, Roger.
Yeah.
Hell, they're probably homeschooled for that matter.
Damn it.
My comment was good, but not that good.
It was so nice, we had to play it twice. And Jenny has joined us from Wisconsin. Hey, Jenny.
Hey, Jenny.
Hope she's there.
Dunk, I don't have my radio on.
You did for a minute.
Nope, not me.
We were hearing it through you.
Well, that may be. I'll turn down the audio on my iPad.
Yeah, it's that ice stuff that always gets us, huh?
Yeah, it might be feeding back through.
Yeah.
I was just looking at that picture. Man, they got some Aryan women folk there.
Well, or Aryan from a bottle.
Yeah, it might be.
Miss, what would that be? Miss Clarionall?
Yeah.
Tough crowd. Tough crowd.
I think all them kids on the one side of the old man are his.
Oh, God.
The grandkids and stuff. He had.
Well, I wonder if any of these cats are members of the Latter-day Saints, the fundamentalist group of it. What was that called? The FD.
LDS.
Whatever LDS. That is. The
LSD.
Yeah. Oh. The.
Okay, I got a Lima Charlie 5x5 from Mark, wherever he may be. Occasionally, Florida. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that. Yeah. Well,
4 minutes 31 seconds on the White Rose.
Excellent.
FDLS was what I was thinking of.
Yeah,
the Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints. No, FLDS.
Yeah. Or FLSD. Wow, dude. Fun, freaky LSD.
There you go.
The walls are breathing, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another of these experts that was Tom Baggioni checked in with, a guy by the name of where'd it go? Daryl Johnson, who also talked to the Oregonian. He's a former domestic terrorism analyst for the Department of Homeland Security. He said that these so-called patriots, you know, the hee-haw caliphate, he said, quote, they'll think nothing about taking half their paycheck and using half of it to buy ammunition and guns.
God.
Yeah, they'd rather have guns than food. And apparently one guy claims to have lost an $80,000 a year job as a roofer in Georgia. Now, you tell me how many roofers in Georgia make $80,000 a year, please.
Union and, I don't know.
Not even union. Well, I doubt there's unions down there for the
right.
construction industry. I mean, maybe in California. I mean, yeah, you can make that much in California.
There's construction unions everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that $80,000 a year is running a small company where he fleeces the pay that should be going to the non-registered people from south of the border that he has working at less than fair wages.
Hey, that's free enterprise, Roger.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? Maybe he's got a part-time business making meth or something. You know, maybe that's part of his 80 grand that he gave up. Mm-hmm. You know?
Must be pretty crappy meth if he's only making 80 grand.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. Bob, I was going to ask you, what's your fundraising going on? I don't know if you've got my email.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Yeah, I sent you an email when Carol was talking yesterday. It was a very good one, and I didn't get a chance to. I don't know if you ever got it, but I was going to.
Rick, I sometimes miss them as we go through the evening.
Yeah.
We've got about $300 to go this evening.
Okay. Well, I have a challenge. I came back from my trip to the Midwest and unexpectedly was handed an envelope from my boss that contained a post-Christmas bonus because I got it after Christmas, but it was dated December 24th. So I'll pledge $50 and, you know, and I'll challenge everybody to try and match that if they're able to.
Well, that would be really helpful, Rick. I appreciate it. For some reason or another, well, it's not for some reason or another. I know what the reason is. The holiday season just got past us, and I imagine a lot of people are pretty beat up after that. And that makes, you know, that makes $5 and $10 over here kind of difficult. Glenn did get us started. Thank you very kindly, and thank you for the challenge, Rick. That would knock out the overage if people would. If people will respond to it, you'll match the next $50 that comes in. But the $50 has to come in,
yeah.
And that would take us down to just having the regular night's $200 to raise.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll throw in 50 and hopefully people can match it. Let's just say that. So it's not, there's no strings attached. I'll throw you 50 either way.
Oh, thanks.
But hopefully somebody else will come through or more people will come through and maybe we'll have a double or nothing challenge. Who knows? Not nothing, but.
Yeah, no, I get it. Thank you, Rick. Thank you very kindly.
Mm-hmm.
And like I've said before, if there was some way to get around doing this, by God, I would. And by the way, speaking of by God, I would, does everybody have their Powerball ticket?
$800 million.
And by the time sales shut off tomorrow evening at 10 p.m. Eastern time, it will be the largest jackpot ever in lottery history. It will probably be up to $1 billion.
That's what I've heard. Do your odds increase or decrease the higher a jackpot gets, Bob? What do you think?
I don't think the odds change.
Yeah, that's probably true, actually.
And you know, any possibility of improving the odds are on a subatomic level. I mean, it's what, 1 in 292 million.
Yeah.
Although I've got a little bit of a paranoid streak. And it did not come as a surprise to me to see that all of a sudden this jackpot grew like it did, knowing that the head of the multi-state lottery recently got sacked because they had a humongous, nasty lottery fixing scandal exposed by a court action. A guy who had been an employee of the multi-state lottery was caught and prosecuted and convicted of fixing. You know, there's several games. There's Powerball, there's Mega Millions, and then there's another one called Hot Lotto. And Hot Lotto grows very, very slowly. Its odds are significantly not as, it's like 1 in 27 million instead of 1 in 292 million or something like that. And if I understood the story correctly, and there's some math stuff here that people like Ben Birch would be really helpful with, supposedly these things are random numbers. All right, somebody like Lottie could probably address this as well. And so a random number is, say, theoretically, all the ping pong balls in the blower, and they pop up. You know, it's just random. But other games are based on a computer-generated random number sequence. And any computer-generated random number sequence, if I understand correctly, is going to have at its core a kernel. And if you can screw with the kernel, you can affect the outcome.
Well, what happens on those is you, at least on, you know, a desktop or whatever, you let this algorithm or whatever crunch, like for not the random number generator, but this thing that they say it builds up entropy. So you kind of let this thing go a while that kind of makes a random place to start, and then you generate a sequence from that. So that's like the, you know, theoretical randomness of starting. And if you have a certain sequence generator and you give it, you know, one number, it will generate, you know, a fixed number. If you do that again with the same initial value, it's going to generate the same, you know, not random anymore.
Tidbit of bizarre trivia. Am I in?
You're in.
Okay. In TI 81, 82, 83, 85 calculators, Texas Instrument calculators, they have a random number generator. If you buy 30 TI 30, 35, 38 calculators, and you ask for a random number on all 30 of them at the same time, the initial random numbers will all be the same because it is the same internal program that does it.
Yeah, but
down the road, they will differentiate depending on how many times you ask for a random number. So trying to create a truly random number, the ping pong balls in the bingo game are better than an electronic calculator. Computer.
Well, an electronic calculator, but that doesn't speak to every random number generator.
Ah, but wait a minute. Every random number generator that are being created by all these lotteries throughout the country are all a computer-generated number.
Yep.
They are not ping pong balls and an error number.
I'm saying that...
No. The Powerball is still a ping pong ball.
There's different random... There's different actual code in the computer programs to generate random numbers. So one might not work as well. It not, might not really be as random as another one. I mean, that there's one, I think, in the C libraries on Linux or Unix or whatever that is known. It's not that not to be so good, you know. So that's how that works.
Well, all I'm saying is that an electronic random number generator has been programmed by somebody in some fashion to create what appears to be a totally random number generator. It is not random. It has been programmed by somebody.
They call it a pseudo-random generator, and that was the thing I was talking about with the entropy buildup. There's something running in your computer that maybe it takes time between key presses or whatever, and it has to run a little, you know, a length of time to build up some randomness. Then you start that as the initial value of the sequence. And then, you know, if you take that same initial value and the same sequence generator, you know, it's going to do the same thing. But you don't start with the same.
Now, when I'm getting into dealing with random numbers for some kind of an experiment or something like that, all these random number generators are fantastic. You know, you get a random number, you play with it and do whatever you want. What I'm getting at is that anytime it is all coming out of silicon chips, even the programmers have all wanted to make them random, and they've done their best to do it and all the rest of it, but it's still predictable. The ping pong balls in an error number on the bingo game are much more technically random than anything created out of the electronics.
It's, I think that, you know, it gets down to that, you could cheat on the computer if you don't ensure that it's run correctly, but you can ensure that it's a pretty random number.
Well, it's a degree of randomness. And the computer is pretty close, but it's not 100% random because every random number generator in electronics is following an algorithm. Whereas the air blowing up in a bunch of ping pong balls are truly, totally random.
You know, but I could argue that that's not true. There might be some defects in some of the balls or... You know, the air blows the same way at the same time, and it may not be truly random.
Okay, so we'll throw in another batch of ping pong balls, and we'll put another blower on it. But the fact is, the randomness of any electronic random number generator is following an algorithm that was created by an individual.
Okay, so here's the story. It concerns a guy named Eddie Raymond Tipton, aged 52. The story comes out of Des Moines, Iowa. And he was convicted of rigging a hot lotto drawing in an attempt to win $14.3 million. He got sentenced a few months back to 10 years in prison. He's appealing. Back in December 2010, when this all went down, he was the information security director for Multi-State Lottery Association. The theory put forward by the Iowa Attorney General was that he used, and I'm not a computer person, but he was accused of using a self-deleting computer program known as a rootkit to manipulate the drawing. And then he had a shell corporation out of, like, Belize try to cash the ticket. And then it turns out that when the investigation continued, there have been a number of compromised lottery drawings in the country. You guys still there?
That doesn't surprise me at all, Bob.
Well, no, I mean, anytime there's a lock, there's going to be a burglar trying to pick it, right?
Yeah,
doesn't surprise me either.
Yeah, I mean, these hackers are very, very skilled, you know.
Well, and this guy was on the inside.
Right. He might have had some help from the outside as well. Although I don't know if the story indicates there were any conspirators. Probably not.
Huh? Oh no, there were because he had help trying to cash the damn thing.
Right.
And apparently they had cashed other ones. And see, nobody plays hot lotto, so I guess he figured. Relatively speaking, nobody. So he figured that it would be easier to get away with.
Oh, well, I'm sitting here in a state of rapt amazement that human beings would stoop so low as to try to rig a lottery.
There's gambling going on in this establishment. I can't believe it.
I am shocked. Shocked.
did y'all see the headline I put in a while ago that, or maybe y'all know, but the Texas governor has jumped on the constitutional convention bandwagon. I don't know if he was already going to, I don't know, sign up for it.
Well, at one point in time, there was a list of states who were committed to or arguably committed to. Now, some of the committed states committed 30 and 40 years ago. So one of the questions will be, how does one determine the validity of a state's vote to have a constitutional convention?
Yeah. Well, it sounded like this guy is just doing it for political reasons, so he sounds, conservative or something.
Abbott, yeah, of course. Yeah, he's an idiot.
I don't know if Texas...
Governor Abbott, Greg Abbott. You need 38 states. That's what, 75%, more, a little more than 75% of 50. So that's what you need for a constitutional convention. I thought I heard Dr. Bill Bob say that there were already like something like 35 states signed up or something.
Depending on how you count them, because mm-hmm. some states have voted on it and then rescinded the vote when the legislature changed hands, that kind of thing. But I think there are 27 that are hard.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean that would be a freaking nightmare. I mean at this point in our political history, with the influence of the big money and big special interests, I mean it would basically be, like cutting up and dividing America between the big companies, as if we don't already have that to a great extent anyway. But on steroids, let's just say.
One of the things that scares me is that, it would scare me if it weren't for the fact that we as progressives are generally so goddamned ineffectual in actually doing anything. Is the progressives out there who think that this would be a great idea because they can just swan right into the convention and take care of Citizens United and then gavel the thing to an end? Silly people. But if some progressive states were to get on board, then it would become truly terrifying. Get a California or a New York, or a Vermont or a Minnesota on, I mean, that's four states. And let's see, 50 divided by 3 into 1 and 20 and 6. Yeah, so 33 states and you're there.
Hmm.
But the big problem is once you open up Constitutional Convention, there's no limit
no.
to what the Constitutional Convention can do.
No, and you can take that for gospel from a, from somebody who hijacked one once, namely, you know, James Madison.
So, Bob, is it two-thirds of the states that are required to call a Constitutional Convention, or is it three-quarters?
I think it's two-thirds.
Oh, shit. Then your math is right, then. It's only, we don't need 38, just 33, so they're getting damn close. Yeah, that's a very scary thought.
And what Roger said is absolutely true. Once you gavel it open, all bets are off and all games are on. So that's well, you know that's why when the Mark Levins and he's a big pusher behind this, when he says, well, you know, it's going to be a very limited constitutional convention. It's going to go for 24 hours only. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I move that the convention remain open indefinitely. Second, we have a second. Call the question. All in favor? Aye. And there goes your 24-hour convention.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's no way to limit it. I mean, the only way to do it is by a constitutional amendment. A convention is just so it's idiocy. You know.
Well, it makes me wonder if maybe somebody should introduce an amendment inside the Congress to eliminate that portion of the Constitution, just strike it, the Constitution of the states.
I mean, if that were to happen, you would have certain states that don't like the new Constitution just break off. You know, is my guess.
Well, like, I mean, the thing gavels open, there's no Constitution anymore.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
It's there, poof.
He's saying there's no United States anymore.
Right. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, the minute that thing gavels in, the government can't print money. It can't cut Social Security checks. Because it has lost all of its legitimacy.
Has no sovereignty anymore. I mean, technically speaking.
I mean, I've meant to ask Dr. Bill about this in the past, because I think it's a fascinating question. What if, instead of being a bunch of dumbasses and opening fire on Fort Sumter, what if the geniuses of the Confederacy had tried to create the momentum for a constitutional convention of the states instead? The minute that thing gavels open, all bets are off. There's no more United States, and everybody has seceded from everybody else.
Ooh, a bloodless war or bloodless secession.
And then, you know, then California, Oregon, Washington, maybe Arizona, maybe Nevada. You know, boom, there's a nation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the old Confederacy forms Jesus Land. And maybe you get the New England states, New York, maybe New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland. And you know, does Ohio go with Jesus Land, or does it? Who knows? And you know, it used to be you could kind of reliably say that Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota would remain sane, but you can maybe say that about Minnesota. But you know, that ship sailed on Michigan and. Michigan and Wisconsin, sadly. I mean, my God, have you seen the latest about the ongoing lead controversy in Flint?
Yeah.
9,000 children have been exposed to the poisonous water, and there are at least 200 children whose lead levels are dramatically above that recommended as tolerable by the FDA, CDC, EPA. In fact, a group of citizen activists in Michigan was going to call for the arrest and prosecution of Rick Snyder. Oddly enough, however, they didn't find it necessary to occupy a bird sanctuary to do that.
Well, Michigan does have bird sanctuaries, I know, you know.
Yeah.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is everywhere.
Hey, speaking of the bird sanctuary, Bob, I know that, you know, while Carol was on the line last night, I had sent you an email. I'll just kind of summarize what I'd said. I unfortunately couldn't hook up with her because I forgot to give you my number to convey to her, so she couldn't text me her address. But anyway, I was only in Missouri for about 24 hours during my trip. Kind of drove through, you know, and through the floods and the rain and so forth. But since Carol is queen of the minions, what does her regnum exactly encompass? Do her subjects include the bird brain denizens? No offense intended to our more intelligent avian friends.
Yeah, and I don't think
Hee-haw Caliphate?
No, I don't think so. The Hee-haw Caliphate is a law unto itself.
Okay, because we really need to know that information, because if she does, if she's commander in chief of Mammon, Bundy, his brother, and all their amosexual cohorts, she could give the order to, like, stand down, and we could end that whole thing. Anyway.
Now, I think if Carol could tell them to go home, they'd have long since been gone.
Right, right.
Go home, pea brains, go home. And that's P-E-E, by the way, not P-E-A.
Exactly.
Because, yeah, you know, when they shake their heads, you can hear it slosh.
That's right. Oh, God. I mean, what do the, you know, it's like, you know, they're basically protesting against arsonists being incarcerated. Like, what the fuck is, you know, obviously they got underdeveloped.
But they hate the guy. There's layers and layers to this, this rotting onion. For instance, there's a possibility that they're going to try to arrest and citizens grand jury indict the sheriff of Harney County.
That's good luck there.
They have presented a notice for redress of grievances as of December 11th to officials of the state of Oregon and Harney County.
Hmm.
Arrested for what?
For not love and liberty. Okay, you want to hear this? I mean, this is hilarious.
Yes.
Yeah.
We all do, Bob.
We the people, united individuals of these states united, coalition of western states, that spells cows, by the way, Pacific Patriot Network, PPN, Bundy family and supporters, Oregon Oath Keepers, Idaho 3%, Central Oregon Constitutional Guard, your Oregon Tactical, Oregon Bearded Bastards, Liberty Watch, Washington, Nevada Committee for Full Statehood, Rural Heritage Preservation Project, Liberty for All, LFA, and lots more names, apparently. Mm-hmm. Notice. Redress of grievance. Notice to agent is notice to principal. Notice to principal is notice to agent. Somebody chopped up a law book and threw it into a blender, and that's what came out. Sheriff David Ward. I mean, you're Billable Rick. You're going to recognize some of this claptrap, okay?
This sounds like it's straight out of some of the tax protester crap I used to have to defend when I was with the feds. You know?
Exactly.
And I'm sure these guys are all protesters as well. This is no different than the Montana Freemen from the 90s, for example, you know?
Right. And it's been going on and on. So we went through the notice part. Sheriff David Ward, Commissioner Dan Nichols, Commissioner Pete Runnels, Justice of the Peace Donna Thomas, District Attorney Tom Colahan, Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum, Governor Kate Brown. Dear Sirs. I like the governor, dear sirs, after Governor Kate Brown.
Yeah, it sounds like a woman to me.
After extensive research on the Hammond case, we the people of these states united have reason to believe that Dwight and Stephen Hammond were not afforded their rights to due process as protected by the United States Constitution. We have principled evidence that Dwight and Stephen Hammond committed no crime in the act of performing the prescribed burn and backfire that the U.S. government does not have any authority to enforce territorial law under, please, we need some punctuation here, boys, under Article 4 within the state of Oregon, and that the county of Harney and the state of Oregon failed to protect the Hammonds' rights as guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution, U.S.C. 42, 1986, 18242, 18121, 42, 1983, 42, 1985, hut, sorry. We hold competitive.
Forgot to throw in an Omaha.
Oh, God damn it! I knew I was forgetting the Omaha because I was about to yell Poughkeepsie.
Peyton ain't done yet, Bob.
We hold compelling evidence that the U.S. government abused the federal court system, situating the Hammond family into duress as effort to force the Hammonds to set. That's Hammonds, possessive apostrophe S. To everybody who's ever been to law school is screaming now, to sell their Steen Mountain property to a federal agency. We have substantial evidence that the U.S. Attorney's Office exploited an act of Congress imposing cruel and unusual punishment upon residents of Harney County. We hold substantial evidence that inside that the U.S. Attorney's Office that inside the borders of Harney County, the U.S. government is acting outside the authority enumerated in the Constitution of the new United States. We secure evidence that the new U.S. Attorney's Office independently prepared the indictment against Dwight and Stephen Hammond, and that the grand jury did not properly assemble or investigate before the indictment. We have no evidence that the grand jury participated in the indictment altogether. We have sure evidence. So we now have, secure evidence, substantial evidence, and sure evidence. Is that in section 400 of the rules of evidence, Rick? The substantial versus sure versus. Notice they haven't gotten around to clear and convincing.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I think it's the rules of it's the rules of evidence for idiots or whatever.
No. What it is, it's the rules of booger eater procedure. Annotated. No. It's the rules of booger eater procedure. Anus tatered.
Oh God! Oh jeez. Okay, I don't think we're going to get into a food porn segment after that comment.
We have sure evidence that U.S. Congress does not have authority to legislate minimum sentences requiring Dwight and Stephen Hammond to serve 5 years in a federal penitentiary. We hold confirming video evidence of federal agents exhibiting a culture of intimidation toward individuals and businesses within the borders of Harney County, that federal agents by fire destroy private property, and that the Hammond family are being denied the same protection of the laws that are enjoyed by federal agents. We have supporting evidence that Judge Hogan controlled the narrative and did not allow full disclosure in the courtroom. We have additional evidence that Dwight and Stephen Hammond were sentenced for something different than what they were found guilty of. We hold sounding evidence, well, there, how about that, that Dwight and Stephen Hammond are victims of cruel and unusual punishment, and that the U.S. Justice Department is violating the Eighth Amendment. They don't have any sounding evidence, however, that anybody's getting their Eighth Amendment rights violated when they get, say, you know, horizontally crucified or anything. You still with me?
Oh, that's perfectly acceptable. That's not cruel and unusual, you know?
Well, especially if they're wrong colored.
There you go.
We have obtained appalling evidence. My goodness.
Jeez, the variety. You have to at least, you know, their adjectives are very, you know, interesting anyway. So, yeah.
Well, I'm waiting for adjectives. We have obtained floral scented evidence.
I think they got us just thesaurus out. It sounds like it.
We have obtained appalling evidence that the U.S. Attorney's Office threatened the Hammond family with early detention and further punishment if the Hammond family continued to communicate with a certain individual. This evidence foundationally speaks against the U.S. Attorney's Office in their gross effort to infringe upon the Hammond's right to free exercise of speech. First Amendment, U.S.C. 18242, Omaha, Hutt. in a commitment to expose the truth and administrate justice, we, the people of these states united, insist that you immediately assemble an independent evidential hearing board. That's an EHB, comprised of the people of Harney County in accordance with common law principles. That the evidential hearing board call witnesses and investigate each of these allegations publicly. That the evidential hearing board makes public conclusions in writing upon their findings. That the Harney County Board of Commissioners and the Sheriff's Department enforce the conclusions of the evidential hearing board in support of the new United States Constitution. We further insist that the Hammond family is be protected from reporting to federal prison until all allegations can be determined. We need not remind you of your lawful duty to act on these matters as insisted, nor of the consequences if you knowingly neglected your duty, USC 18-2382, 18-2071, 18-2076, 42-1983, 42-1984, 14-1986, Peoria, Hutt. In light of the information presented, we require your thoughtful response within 5 days of the date of this year notice. If we do not receive your response within 5 days, we will have no choice but to understand, I don't think they could understand how to tie a goddamn shoelace, that you do not wish to do your duty, they said duty, and are content in acting in negligence to your solemn oath to the people who have placed you in this fiduciary position and in defiance of your obligation to defend the rights and liberties, those are both capitalized, they're German now, they're capitalizing fucking nouns, of the little p people. Therefore, govern yourself accordingly. Fill your hands, you sons of bitches. No, that's not in there. Respectively, not respectfully, respectively, we the people, united individuals of these states, united.
I got a question.
So, Bob, yeah, what occurs to me, though, first, Tim, if you don't mind, this is all addressed to local officials and state officials, not federal officials, right?
Yes.
This was a federal prosecution. Can you say barking up the wrong tree?
Can you say barking at a bicycle thinking it's a tree?
Oh boy. I think you get the toaster there, Bob, for that.
Well, thank you very kindly. After that, I live for getting a good laugh out of you, Billable Rick. I really do.
Oh man, that was good. That was good.
I'm not a law student or whatsoever. So if they were to present this to a state judge in Oregon, they're going to throw it out.
Oh, it'll never be filed. It wasn't designed to be filed. It's not going to be filed in any court because they didn't. Tim.
So how are they going to get them out?
No, they don't acknowledge the legitimacy of the jurisdiction of the federal courts, even though they make a mess in their underwear every time they say the word Constitution.
Yeah, but so what was this exercise in? Just futility?
Absolutely.
Yeah. They're sovereign. See, these are sovereign citizens.
Right. They're citizens. So they don't recognize of, let's say, they're citizens of, you know, typically they recognize as the highest authority the sheriff of the county where they live or something like that, you know?
Yeah, because it goes back to Mary Oldie.
Caleb or whatever that Mormon.
No, as bizarre as it may seem, this has nothing to do with Kolob. No, this has to do with Mary Oldie Engeland. Where once upon a time there was something called the Shire Reeve.
Yeah.
Okay?
I love that.
And that word becomes sheriff.
Okay, so who's going to...
You know, Sheriff of Nottingham, that's the kind of sheriff they think we... Yeah, right. But as goofy as these dumb bastards are... they may have plans to try to kidnap the sheriff of Harney County and put him on trial.
Where?
You know, kind of like ISIS does.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, kind of like you see in TV dramas where you have this insurgent group that kidnaps officials and they kind of create their own star chamber, so to speak, you know?
Well, they're going to... It's a concept they have, and we covered a story about it out of Florida at one point. They impanel what they call citizens' grand juries. And this, again, goes back to Mary Oldie Engeland. When once upon a time, the Shire Reeve would get a haywain And he would drag it around through the county, and he'd have a bunch of citizen freemen sitting on hay in the wagon, and they would hear the grievances of the county and render judgments. I mean, this is stuff that goes back to, you know, the era of Dennis. We have some lovely filth down here, that stuff. Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords. There's no basis for a system of government, supreme executive, and it's the same thing. So what they want to do is they want to kidnap the sheriff of Harney County. They want to present the case to a citizens' grand jury, which of course will be made up of will not be made up of people who are actual citizens that they don't want on the citizens' grand jury. In other words, in other words, it's a kangaroo court with front legs as big as its back, and then they'll convict him, and then they'll hang him or something. Among other things, and this doesn't get talked about so much, among other things, Sheriff Ward's wife has had to leave the area.
Jeez, you know, this is getting out of control. When these cats go out to restaurants for, you know, lunch and dinner, I mean, the federal law enforcement should be all over these people and just basically pick them off and bring them in and arrest them. You know.
Yeah.
This is going way too far, you know, what these folks are doing, because, you know, they're certainly not above kidnapping people to satisfy their ideology, their weird ideology. You know, they're no different than the ISIS folks in that regard, you know.
Okay, exactly, and here's the proof. According to these weirdos, with their posses and their citizens' grand juries and their evidentiary review boards, if someone is deemed to have violated their oath of office, and this is a quote, he shall be removed by the posse to the most populated intersection of streets in the township, and at high noon be hung by the neck, the body remaining until sundown as an example to those who would subvert the law.
Hung?
And this is not from The Onion?
No.
Hung,
not hanged. I mean, we're not. There's no grammar Nazis in the sovereign citizen movement.
But
Sheriff Ward's wife left town because a group of strangers stalked her and followed her home one night. And the next morning, when she got up, she found out her tire had been slashed.
Oh boy, these guys are worse than Scientologists, Bob. In terms of how they surveil people.
It's sickening. It is absolutely sickening.
I read they were bringing in sheriff's deputies from every county in Oregon.
Shit, send them to the LAPD.
And they're setting up defensive positions around the courthouse and the sheriff's office.
Send in that badass who blew away Tamir Rice. Send in that tough motherfucker who strangled Eric Garner to death.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
But then again, they're probably signed on to the group.
Shit, sit in the LAPD. Look what they did to the SLA. No, but I got a question. They're quoting all these federal laws. They don't recognize the federal government. So why do they quote them laws in the Constitution?
Because they're idiots. They're dangerous idiots with a lot of guns, Tim.
Yeah, consistency is obviously not one of their fortes, let's just say, Tim. I mean, they'll basically rattle off whatever gobbledygook they think supports their position, even if it makes no internal sense or have any internal consistency.
And the Koch brothers are supporting them, huh?
Well, we don't know that, but we suspect.
Speculation.
Oh, meanwhile, one of the people who I suspect is about now kicking furniture is our buddy Harry over in Baltimore. Because he responded earlier to my argument, my suggestions about mental health and guns. Harry sent an email saying, many or perhaps most people who are severely pathological do not go get help for their problems voluntarily, if ever. In other words, most of the sociopaths in this country, as well as definitely most of the people with severe narcissism, are not going to voluntarily decide that they need or want to see a therapist because, for example, a severe narcissist of the grandiose type doesn't view him or herself as having problems. In his or her mind, it's all of the other people who have the problems. So a law involving broad mental health criteria would inadvertently catch up in its net countless relatively healthy people who sought counseling or therapy precisely because they were quite self-aware and sane. I think it is fair to say that some of the leaders of the NRA are fanatics with serious or severe pathologies that go undetected and undiagnosed because they would never go near a mental health provider. And I agree, Harry, and it also goes undetected and undiagnosed because they have enough money to serve as an impenetrable wall around them.
Absolutely. Plus the sorts of cats that and populate the NRA. I mean, the leaders. I mean, psychopathy is very difficult to diagnose from a mental health perspective. It's one of the more difficult things to diagnose, and there's no treatment for it. That's the problem.
Well, exactly. And Steve up in New York, another furniture kicking lawyer out there. under the subject line, because Bob, the Constitution don't say nothing about no courts, which is broad brush humor because there's an entire article of the Constitution that's about nothing but courts. And there were discourses in the Federalist Papers about the courts and how the courts would work and what the courts would do. Yeah, by the way, a little dispatch from Ron in the Ron, is it frozen up there? Or, I mean, sort of slushy or what? Ron noted earlier, I will simply observe that Canada hasn't expropriated any territory for a coon's age. And now, with all the immigrants and refugees coming in, we're verging on one person per square kilometer. I'm sure we would be willing to assume some new cousins from the south.
Oh, please. Do so.
Well, you know,
he doesn't want those guys.
I think that's an invitation to the normal people down here.
He's
you know
in
what?
The room. I don't know why he doesn't say something.
I don't know.
I'm just trying to help, guys.
And help you are. And you know what? I know somebody you don't want to come back.
Oh, Ted Cruz?
No, Justin Bieber. Well, okay, him too. But Justin Bieber.
Well, no, you can keep Bieber and Celine Dion down there. We'd be happy. I mean, we might even block a cold front.
Yeah, that would be lovely if you would, because I've got some really, really shallow Justin Bieber news.
Is there any other kind?
Not really, no. But it's one of those things that matters to me because of the things that I'm fascinated with. So Bieber went to visit the ancient Mayan ruins in Tulum, which is a magnificent sight. And Tulum faces the Caribbean, and he got his sorry ass bounced out of there because he thought that all the signs there saying things like prohibited, no visitors, only applied to the little people and not to he, Bieber. So he just went right through and decided, because when the departments that are tasked with preserving and protecting archaeological sites and precious parts of our shared cultural heritage do that, they do so because there's work ongoing or because there's unsafe situations or because foot traffic would prove potentially damaging. Think back to when Greenpeace decided to go up and tap dance on the Nazca Plains. But no, Bieber decided to go walk about in a prohibited area at Tulum. Thanks, you brainless culturalist boob. At which point, guards from the institute overseeing the sites stopped him and invited him to leave. You know, when you get invited to leave in Mexico can mean ever so many things. You know.
It's like animal husbandry in West Virginia.
Oh, shut up. and by the way, Rick, you kindly put that challenge out there a few minutes ago, and I regret to inform that no one has picked up on it yet. So We remain at $250 to go in fundraising. Your challenge is on the table. And, you know, I don't want to sit around. Fretting all weekend about a $500 fundraising goal for More and Monday. But that's just me, and I'm spoiled, I guess. And I hate doing that, but I have to mention these things along the way because, you know, hey, it's 20 minutes until 9 o'clock here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. We got 20 minutes remaining in what started out to be a kind of a dicey, dodgy sort of Friday on the front porch because of technical difficulties. But I think Ben successfully swore at the servers long enough that that he got stuff sorted out.
Come on, folks. Everybody, you know, freedom is not free here. This, you know, this thing costs money to run. It's not a lot of money, a lot less than NPR and, you know, all the, you know, KPFA and KPFK and all the, you know, the public radio stations, the progressive radio stations, and just $200 a night. I mean, come on. You know, if someone else got a Christmas bonus, throw it in. Give what you can.
Right, and I mean, if you, if
I don't get Christmas bonuses anymore, Rick.
But it's not a joke. This. I wish I could say that this was supporting some sort of lavish lifestyle, but it ain't. The fact of the matter is, the bills here are very real and very high. And that's because, you know, we've got multiple internet lines coming in. I mean, for instance, we had to have an entirely standalone internet line brought in just to run the gizmo that, like, when I sub for the Malloys, there's a separate internet line that does nothing but that. And of course, you know, the various and sundry gizmos themselves, the other internet bills, the telephony, Jesus, and, you know, silly things like electricity and heat in January, that kind of thing. And for, like I said, the first week of January has been kind of tough, and that's probably understandable from the standpoint of people getting over the Christmas holiday. But, you know, $5 or $10 at a time, it adds up in a hurry.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, Rick.
I just saw
it land. Thank you.
Oh, you bet. You bet. I ended up going to the Hose Bowl after all this year.
That had to suck.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. I made a last minute decision at about like 11:35 and the kickoff was like at 2. At about 11:35, I'd been like looking at these secondary ticket sites to get a ticket, and I finally decided, okay, go ahead. You know, my friend told me, well, just go ahead. You're going to regret it if you don't.
Because, you know, so I was going to win.
Yeah, right, right. As they always do every time the four times they've gone in my lifetime, they've lost by, I think, at least 20 points each time, you know? It's been not quite 20. It was 17 in 95, but 96, but hey, who's counting? But, you know, I ended up getting really good seats. I was on the 30-yard line on the Stanford side, but I was around a bunch of Iowa fans. I would say that about 60% of the fans were for Iowa. And, you know, even though it was a one-sided game, I did get to see history made in terms of McCaffrey, the way he was running over everybody.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah, that guy was just, you know. And it wasn't Iowa had a bad defense. Yeah, they weren't as fast as he was, but none of the other teams they played this year were either. I was also going to congratulate you, Bob, on your Mountaineers. I was rooting for them all the way, and their quarterback, man, what, 540 yards throwing? I mean,
yeah, I wish he would have showed up earlier. But then again, Arizona State had a notoriously bad defensive backfield.
Well, you know, he sort of looked like Joe Willie in the games he used to play against the Dolphins on Monday night, you know, like throwing for 500 yards or whatever, you know, crazy stuff, you know.
But the thing is, he's such, I guess he's got the job for next year, Skylar Howard does. That's who we're talking about.
Yeah.
But it also means that we got Dana Hologram for another season or six.
Did he get an extension yet or not?
I haven't seen, but that'll be in the offing. I mean, this was year five. And, you know, by year five, you're supposed to have your hallmark quarterback, your feature back. I guess we're all we're all armchair coaches and everything. But I watched the Big 12 season for several years now, and I can't help think that if anybody would actually bother in that conference to develop a goddamn defense. they could probably run the table in the conference because it's all just air raid. It's all run and gun.
Yeah.
It was an exciting game, and it's a real oddity for me as a long-suffering Mountaineer fan to see the Mountaineers snatch victory from the jaws of defeat as opposed to what ordinarily happens. To watch them come down to the wire and snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
There you go. It was the last bowl game of the year, and it was the most exciting, I must say.
Really was an exciting game.
It was. I mean, if only the Rose Bowl had been that way.
Well, no, we got one more game. I mean, come on.
Yeah, the national championship. That could be good.
Roll Tide, y'all.
I think the Tide is going to win, but I'm hoping for at least a competitive game, you know? You know, so I'm not wasting my time watching, you know, some 38-0 game. I mean, after Michigan State got waxed by Alabama, I was like thinking before the Rose Bowl, oh, geez, thank God Iowa only has to play Stanford. They didn't play, you know, thank God they lost to Michigan State because they would have gotten killed by Alabama. Well, they got killed pretty well by Stanford.
And, you know, I thought that was a pretty serious can of whoop-ass that got opened by Alabama on Michigan State. But the fact of the matter was, Stanford opened a bigger one on your Hawkeyes.
Yeah, I mean, 35-0.
Yeah, you had the score of the Alabama-Michigan State game at the freaking half.
Yeah, pretty damn close. Actually, it got to 38-0 early in the third quarter, I think, and then Iowa finally got on the board. They got a field goal to get on the board. And I was yelling for the coach to do an onside kick after that just so that they wouldn't give the ball back to McCaffrey. But, you know, the Iowa kicked it off as a regular kickoff, you know. But, it was disappointing. I mean, I at least got to sit next to a bunch of Iowa fans. I mean, no matter where you are, you know, Iowa fans are just very friendly, you know.
Well, and you know I have a soft spot for Iowa. I mean, we've talked about that in the past, but, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Meanwhile, under the subject line, I can't resist a little bit of gloating from Steve in New York. OSU beat Notre Dame handily. Yeah, just everybody chant, overrated, bump, 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 overrated, bump, bump, bump. Talking about Notre Dame, of course.
Notre Dame, yes.
Hey, Bob.
Tim.
So West Virginia won. I hope you weren't offended when I said So you still don't believe in God?
No, I wasn't offended at all because I don't think any deities had anything to do with that whatsoever. We won in spite of ourselves.
Well, did you see that? Did you see that catch that the receiver made? He was the third guy to touch the ball. The West Virginia guy went out. It bounced off of a West Virginian guy's hands, and then it looked like an interception. And then the Arizona State guy dropped it, and it rebounded into a West Virginia player. On a big play, actually, for a big game. I think the gods are on the side of the Mountaineers for that game, Bob.
Maybe so. I mean, Oklahoma certainly didn't hold up the banner of the dear old Big 12 very well.
No, that was disappointing. I mean,
But you said that was the most exciting bowl game? No. The most exciting bowl game was the one that came on right before the Mountaineers. Oregon and TCU?
Oh, well, yeah. I most exciting from the standpoint of being competitive from the beginning, like the number of lead changes and back and forth and stuff. But, yeah, the TCU game was good. I was watching that with a buddy who's a big Pac-12 fan. And after it got to be 31-0, I said, oh, come on, TCU score. Let's make it a little bit of a game. And he said, be careful what you wish for. It could get closer. And he got kind of pissed as TCU tied it and then ended up winning it, you know. But, yeah, that was exciting starting in the fourth quarter, but not the whole game like West Virginia ASU was, because they were just going back and forth the whole time.
What is this football of which you speak?
Well, it's kind of like that stuff y'all play up there in the unfrozen north in the summertime.
Yeah, Canadian football, I've never been able to get my head around a 25-yard deep end zone field that's 10 yards wider and three downs. It's
at that point in time, it's foosball, isn't it, Ron? I mean, why not just put walls around it and let people bounce?
Yeah, they called that arena football, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, and I don't know why they didn't just adopt that in with the rest of the CIA. I mean, it can be exciting. It's just it's like a bubble off plum, you know.
Yep, especially if you were raised watching and playing U.S. football, real football, not that football they play in Europe, and it was. I don't know. I've been up here damn near. Well, I've been up here a long time. Can't get my head around it at all.
Well, for starters, it's the wrong damn time of year.
Yeah. Well,
but no way was upstart Canadian football gonna compete with Hockey Night in Canada. It just wasn't gonna happen.
No. But I mean, my local team made it to the Grey Cup in their second year. And their third reincarnation from going tits up. And it's, you know, I didn't even watch the damn game.
Is that Ottawa, Ron?
Yep.
Okay.
And, you know, second year, yeah, they were doing great. Everybody who loves Canadian football was all excited. And I'm going, didn't work for me.
You know what's going to be weird is when... Is when the No Fun League finally capitulates and gives London a team. Can you imagine the road game for the Raiders or the Niners?
Well, London's...
They've already played London's, in London once.
Yeah,
I know, but if it's part
of... They play every year, yeah.
Yeah, but, well, but if it's part of a regular season where you swap home and homes and all of that...
Yeah, but what division?
Especially divisional games. Yeah, Eastern, I guess.
Yeah, right? they have to be in the NFC or AFC East.
Yeah. Well, it'd be tougher
to move the Jacksonville Jaguars to London.
Well, maybe the Rams want to go to London.
No, you know, they want to go to LA.
I mean, they want to go home. The last thing I want is three freaking pro teams in LA, because then I'm just going to be watching three mediocre teams every week, and I won't be able to see my Great Bears.
Yeah, but you don't have any pro football teams in LA, do you?
No, I know, and the reason, yeah, we don't, and I'm hoping we don't get any, but it looks like we're going to get at least two.
Oh, I mean, it's LA. For God's sakes, Rick, it's LA.
Oh, I know, but the thing is, we get to see more games on TV. Let's say I have a greater chance of seeing my Bears, when they're good anyway, on TV.
I was going to say, why would you want to? But
I know. Not this year. This year, it's like they found new ways to lose every game, you know? Sort of like your Mountaineers did at times, I think. But, yeah, basically we're going to get to see one less game on TV because we're going to be forced to watch the road games of the local teams when they go on the road, because those will always be on the boob tube.
And you're mortally afraid that they'll suck.
Well, they will suck. I mean, the only one I have some confidence in is maybe the Chargers, but they always seem to, you know, come up a dollar short, you know, a day late, you know?
Well, that's because you've got that Opus Dei freak under center. What's his name?
Phil Rivers.
Yeah, Philip Rivers of Athens, Alabama, I might note.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, as we move toward the close of the program, there is a $50 matching challenge that has been anonymously put forward, and that would be mightily helpful to have that matched. Thanks very kindly to all of you. We have taken it down considerably, Let's see, let's do 200. We're down to 180 now. Thank you. Thank you to Sylvia and another individual. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to name names or not, but there's another $50, so that would take us down to only $80 to go so that we don't have a big old hole in the ground come Moran Monday. You know, it's tough to be in a hole in the ground with a bunch of Morans. There's not a lot of elbow room there. there they are barking at bicycles thinking they're trees. Yeah. Let's throw it to Jim in the weather center.
It's raining toasters now, Bob.
Yeah, you know, it is. It is.
Here in Southern California. Yeah.
Damn, they hurt. And a note coming in from Steve in New York. Before we all sign off, just want to tell everyone to have a great weekend, Steve says, and I really do love you all. Thanks to everyone for being there, even if you didn't know when I was really on the brink. Yeah. Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Thank you for the reminder of what a community, what an amazing little community this really, really is.
This is better than therapy in terms of maintaining your sanity, you know, Bob?
Well, God knows it helps me. Yes, yes, Jenny, yes.
It's Jenny, and thank you so much. I only got the last half hour. Made a huge difference.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so very glad. I saw you in the room, and we came to you a couple of times, but I didn't know if you were hooked up or not.
Yeah, no. My mom moved in with me, and she's in hospice. And so the nurse is calling and is like, so yeah, but it's good. Like this last half hour is.
Oh, Jenny, hospice is rough and humane at the same time.
Yeah.
I know hearing that everybody's thoughts and hearts just went out to you.
Thank you. So
you take care, Jenny.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's rough.
Been down that road twice in the last couple of years.
Good and rough. But, yeah. So, anyway, just happy to be here. And I love everybody.
Well, Jenny, you are a vital part of the Wisconsin contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation. And we value you, and we hope only the very best for you.
Right back at you, Jenny.
Thank you.
So, the second time doesn't get you any easier.
No, it doesn't. And it does, and the passage of time doesn't make things particularly easier either. February 1st will mark the anniversary of my father's passing. And I know it probably makes me sound like I need to be put away somewhere. I talk to him all the time. I miss him. Well, just miss him. So I guess we should probably round it up and close it out. Thank you,
everyone.
Can
I say one thing, Bob?
Absolutely, Jenny. Absolutely.
You always say it's the Horn family, and I honestly believe you guys are my family. I listen to you all the time, and I love everybody. That's all.
Well, you know, I don't know if people remember, but I've mentioned it here in the studio. The painting that you so kindly gave to me hangs here, and I love art. And I'm one of those weirdos who will just stand and look at a painting because I think that's what you're supposed to do. I look at your painting of the sand hills of Wisconsin, and no matter what's going on here, it can always just take me away for a little bit. And it's just lovely, absolutely lovely. And I thank you for it, Jenny. And no doubt you are a part of this family. This community, this we band of siblings, yes. But
hey, Bob.
Yes.
Quick note: I just got informed today that both the Louvre and the Guggenheim are building museums in Abu Dhabi, and they're going to get part of the regular parts of the rotating collections between both museums.
Oh my God!
I didn't realize anybody had that much money.
Well, won't that piss off the fundies in that part of the world that think that it's no? It's, I mean, it's not just Muhammad you can't paint a picture of.
I ain't going there.
Yeah. All right. Just like before, we're going to run out of time, but my friend Alex Schaefer, I have an artist friend in L.A. called Alex Schaefer. Look him up. He was a guy who he went out and did plein air paintings of banks on fire, and the cops came to his house. He was a guy who was behind the big, huge Bernie, 15-foot Bernie Sanders puppet at the Rose Bowl parade. Look him up. He went to like the biggest art show in LA, dressed up Zerp, zero interest clown, and then stuck little red stickers on paintings because that means they sold. They've never sold. Anyway, but look up Alex Schaefer, everybody in the Horn family.
We will. That'll be fun.
It's Alex or Alec?
A-L-E-X.
Okay, gotcha. Schaefer. Okay.
S-H-A-F-F-E-R?
S-H. I always want to say E, but I think S-C-H-A-E-F-E-R.
Okay, because that's enough. Okay. Well, I bet you everybody's going and looking now. Thank you, Jenny, and thank you, everyone. Thank you for your capable moderation of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group once again, Sparky. And thanks for everyone for your ongoing patience with my with the buffering and the streaming issues. It looks like Ben managed to whip the server into shape. The recording won't be as bizarre as the program was if you're listening later, so that's cool. Remember, there's a $50 challenge on the table, and it would be great if we could do more on Monday, maybe even with that taking the whole thing. Who knows? But have a wonderful weekend, everyone, wherever you are and however you are. And we'll be back for more in Monday, and we'll have a blast. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina. Really, truly, it is all for you. Good night, y'all.